Welcome everyone to another episode of Faith All Over the Place. This is episode number 21, and we are the podcast that seeks to encourage casual conversations about faith among friends and foes. We could work on foes too. Coming to you pre-recorded from the glorious Sonoran Desert on a beautiful fall day. I'm Stephen Cruiser. Joining me from deep in the woods of Georgia is my good friend Chris Queen, who will then introduce our guests because they are old friends. How you doing?
That is right. That's right. I've known today's guest for a long time. I'm at the age now where I stop counting years that I've known people. But Evan is a great guy. He's a terrific speaker and pastor and teacher. He's a professor of apologetics at Luther Rice College and Seminary here in Georgia. And let's welcome him to the podcast, Dr. Evan Posey.
Thank you, Evan, for being here.
You're very welcome. It's a privilege to be with you guys. Thanks so much.
Can we start with you just explaining to anybody who's like casually listening and doesn't know exactly what apologetics is, so that we have a good foundation for discussing it for the rest of the
episode? Yeah, no one knows. That was my best Nate Bargatze answer, right?
The weird thing was you kind of sounded like him when you said it. So I laughed right away because I made the connection immediately.
I hate to derail the conversation real quick, but I saw that he's opening a theme park in Nashville.
You're kidding me.
Dead serious.
Two years ago, nobody knew who he was. That's the power of television,
and
people.
A social media friend of mine who used to be a Disney Imagineer is helping him with the programming and the design of the park.
Oh, wow. My goodness. That's a game changer. I'm excited about that. That's awesome. So, apologetics. There's lots of different ways to sort of define it, and I'll give you sort of the academic answer, but then I'll give you more of a pastoral answer, kind of boots on the ground. How does apologetics work out in the real world? Apologetics is from a Greek word, apologia, which is probably one of the first appearances of that word would be in Plato's Apology. And the sort of context that it's describing is a legal defense. So if you give an apology, it's not like you're admitting fault. You know, when we tell our children, hey, apologize to your brother, you know, what you're trying to say is, hey, I'm sorry for doing this thing. But the actual meaning of the word is to give a legal defense from reason. Now, one can give any number of apologetics. So you might have, for example, Islamic apologetics or Jewish apologetics or even atheistic apologetics. So that sort of gives you a subcategory there. My specialty and expertise is Christian apologetics, is to give a defense for the Christian faith. In other words, why we believe what we believe, and to provide cogent and reasonable responses to challenges to the Christian faith. Now, that's sort of the academic, ivory tower answer. But honestly, on a day-to-day basis, as I see it through the Christian lens, Christian apologetics is the role of servant. And a Christian apologist is one that helps a skeptic navigate intellectual, emotional, and volitional roadblocks to the cross. My goal as a servant is to help people remove barriers so that God can do what only God can do, to bring people to the cross of Jesus Christ, and to ask him to bring them from death to life. So that's sort of the practical aspect of apologetics, at least as I see it.
That was a very good answer. Chris, you want to kick things off? I got a couple things I want to ask.
Yeah. Why do you think apologetics is growing in prominence? I think, you know, probably 15, 20, 25 years ago, people weren't talking about apologetics as much. And now you hear it a lot. Why do you think it's become much more prominent?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you do, if you look over Christian history, you'll see that apologetics as a formal discipline can be a bit of a flash in the pan, meaning it shows up when it's needed. And this is sort of the characterizes the reaction of the church anyway, is that mostly the church has its doctrines, and then apologetics kicks in when there's some sort of particular challenge to a doctrine. And what we have found, I would say, you guys are Gen X, right?
I'm tail end of boomer.
Are you? Okay, excellent. Yeah. So you that sort of boomer generation, but mainly Gen X, is informed by philosophical relativism and the mounting influence, which is now waning, frankly. If you were to listen to Alex O'Connor, popular YouTube podcast atheist, the new atheist influence of the last 15 to 20 years is now waning a bit, and it's taking on a new form. But I think that's why you see so much of an emphasis on Christian apologetics through folks like William Lane Craig, J.P. Moreland, Greg Koch, or even Frank Turek now has been thrust into a greater spotlight as a result of Charlie Kirk's death. But all of this is essentially the wave responding to the likes of Christopher Hitchens, Daniel Dennett, Sam Harris. Who's the fellow over across the pond? Dawkins, Richard Dawkins.
Oh God, Dawkins.
Yeah.
So they're in, you know, I look back at now, I don't know how many people actually have their science book from freshman year of college, but I happen to have it on the shelf, and I pulled it off the shelf, and much to my surprise, the author, Richard Dawkins, you know.
Wow.
And this was like a freshman physical science class.
Yeah, that's like academic history books that are quoting Howard Zinn.
Seriously.
It's insane.
So we see that. I think this resurgence of Christian apologetics is one sort of a trend in Christendom, right? Is that the apologists come out when there are potent arguments against the faith or challenges to the faith. And then it will sort of creep back into the background when those challenges have been roundly either answered or refuted. And then they'll come back up. And right now, I think we see ourselves in a bit of that cycle of still responding on the at a popular level with the academic challenge of Dawkins, Dennett, and his folks, the four horsemen of new atheism, so to speak.
I wonder if technology has a role in it too, as well, just with the advent of YouTube and podcasting, that makes it easier to get apologetic materials into your fingertips.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Without a doubt. It's sort of the printing press for the 21st century, right?
Mm-hmm.
I became aware of Sean McDowell because he was guesting on a Catholic podcast.
Exactly.
That's how I found him. And it was, I think it's piggybacking on what you were just talking about, or in the same vein, I'm curious. Now, this could be something that's a little too esoteric, because I don't think it gets covered enough, for one thing. We cover it here in conservative media, but how much do you think this rise in apologetics, popularity of apologetics, has to do with all of the persecution of Christians? It's very real and on the rise throughout the world.
It absolutely is. There's no doubt that there's a correlation and perhaps even causation there. And there's plenty of history in the church to, I think, not just anecdotal, but if you look over church history, there's a relationship between the persecution of the church and the rise and prominence of the defense of the Christian faith. And of course, the church is characterized by, at least for the vast majority, people who not only give arguments for the faith, but they end up giving their lives for the faith.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it's true.
As an apologetic, frankly, that's another sort of area of those who are willing to not only make the case, but to make the sacrifice that that our Lord made for the truth. And so that's unfortunate, but that is something that our Lord told us would happen too.
Mm-hmm. That's true. There, apologetics takes a lot of different forms. There's a kind of the philosophical type of apologetics, but I even kind of view a lot of the archaeological and physical evidence and textual evidence that backs up the Bible's claims as a form of apologetics too. Do you think that using physical and textual, how do you think that helps bolster the philosophical arguments?
Yeah, that's good. Broadly speaking, there are about four methodologies within Christian apologetics. One would be something along the lines of presuppositionalism, or even reformed epistemology. The other would be a classical apologetic, which is a two-step process of moving from philosophy to evidentialism. Then you have evidentialism as its own methodology, which is what you were referring to, Chris, or at least whether or not you knew that, there is a methodology called evidentialism that deals with archaeological and textual evidences, historical evidences, to corroborate the claims of the Bible or the Christian worldview. And then, of course, there's always the person who says, I'm actually an eclectic apologist, meaning I take them all. I eat the meat and leave the bones, so to speak. But yeah, evidentialism is a very strong apologetic method. One of the more prominent evidentialists is a gentleman named Gary Habermas, who I studied under at Liberty. And so he was, I took what I kind of, I think I might have coined the term, the Habermas hat trick. Now, that's a...
I like that.
It's important because he was also the hockey coach at Liberty.
I did not know that. Wow.
Meaning I took all classes he offered, you know, the historical Jesus, resurrection of Jesus, miracles, and the like. And so, yes, evidentialism is an important methodology, and historical, textual, scientific evidences are important in the apologetic enterprise. Yeah, very important.
Now, you're an academic, obviously, but apologetics in this day and age, Chris was talking about the accessibility through social media. So now, like, somebody new to it, somebody new, you know, like a lot of us, you know, like Chris and I, we've been talking about apologetics for a long time. We've read a lot of apologetic authors. And but for someone new, someone getting into this, what is the easiest of all the approaches you just talked about, the easiest to access first, without like needing a minor in archaeology and history and theology all at once?
Yeah, very good. I'll give you three. Oof, gosh, I have to narrow it down. On Guard by William Lane Craig is a great entree to Christian apologetics. If you wanted to step it up just a hair, he also wrote a book called Reasonable Faith, which is the name of his ministry. Frank Turek has a great book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, which is a great entry point to Christian apologetics.
I know of that one, yes.
More Than a Carpenter, that's so old school, right? Good entry point to Christian apologetics. Greg Kokel from Stand to Reason has several books that are, if you coupled them together, provides a great tool belt for the person who's interested in Christian apologetics, and that would be The Story of Reality, which is his version of mere Christianity. Relativism, subtitled Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. And I would couple those two works with his website for his ministry, Stand to Reason, which is essentially a library of Christian apologetics material. And it's all very accessible, pedestrian. You don't need advanced degrees in apologetics, but he's a very clear thinker and provides a good, accessible case for the Christian worldview. So those are all really great starter resources, if you will.
Kogel's book, Tactics, is also really good.
Yes, thank you, Chris. Yes, Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions, is a wonderful book on... well, the subtitle kind of says it all, but it equips the believer with tools to engage with skeptics and engage with worldviews, employing particular strategies like asking questions like, what do you mean by that? Which is a probing question to tease out the reasons that a person holds the view that they hold. And he has I won't go through the whole book, but yes, Chris, that's a wonderful text for anyone interested, not only in learning about apologetics, but applying it in their own life.
Yeah, Absolutely. There are quite a few books out there on how to defend yourself for Christians, which is like important for a lot of, especially in an increasingly hostile secular age, where it's for people, I call them evangelical atheists, you know, those atheists who are just can't wait to tell you they're atheists and they want to jump all over you. And they're irritating people, but I got to approach them with grace. And it's just I want to treat them like little children, like, well, you know, they're like toddlers who just learned a word and then misuse it for 3 weeks. But just want to pat him on the head. And I'm like, well, aren't you adorable? But you need to know how to defend yourself. Here's something that maybe you can disabuse me of this notion. Or this is what I know. Not having casually read some apologetics, and this is what we're like. We're kind of like ecumenical here on this podcast when it comes to Christianity, and, you know, have everybody from different parts of the Christian world talking to each other. And that's how Chris and I started this. When I read like basic apologetics, it seems like it's truly ecumenical. The defenses of the church, the ones there's that's where all of the overlap is and not a lot of the Christian division is. That's what it seems like to me.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case? Is my exposure to it too limited? I mean, like, I have no problem just like grabbing this guy. I'm not checking which denomination the author belongs to if it's a good apologetics book. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I think I know what you mean, at least. And I think that's a virtue, at least in terms of apologetic circles, because one, we want to avoid any sort of genetic fallacy or an a priori sort of bias against a reasonable defense based upon where it comes from, right? And so let's just say, for example, that if I'm a Protestant and, you know, I have Protestant convictions, then I don't, you know, I'm going to dismiss any Catholic argument for the existence of God. Well, you're going to have to write off Aquinas then, you know, and so that's off the table for you. But you're writing him off not because of his some deficiency in his argument. You're writing him off merely because he's Catholic. And apologists tend to be more strategic than that. And they're going, we are looking at what Lewis called mere Christianity. Those, not that it's a simple Christianity, that it's the things that we all hold in common. So while I may be Baptist in terms of my confessions and theological convictions, I have no problem looking at solid arguments from, let's say, Pints with Aquinas and whoever the Catholic apologist is, or Council of Trent was a pretty popular Roman Catholic YouTube channel that deals with Catholic apologetics. So because there's overlap in the worldview, I think we shouldn't dismiss arguments in favor of the worldview because of where they come from. You can still hold your parochial denominational convictions and respect a rigorous defense of the Christian faith, because the Christian tent is larger than some particular denomination, I think. However, that whole issue of the Christian tent is also rather exclusive, and we see folks trying to, and worldviews that try to get in that tent. I'm thinking the Latter-day Saints or Jehovah's mm-hmm. Witnesses and that sort of thing. So we still have to be rather discerning and discriminatory, if you will, in terms of ideologies and worldviews of what is actually Christian. So, yeah, I don't think you're wrong in seeing a greater tolerance, bandwidth for ecumenical conversation within the apologetic circles than you might see, you know, and those who are in purely systematic theology.
Oh, you know, you brought up a good example there of Pints with Aquinas, Matt Frad. He's like a very traditional Catholic, and I got, you know, as Chris knows, I can go for an hour about the arguments within the Roman Church right now between the Tradies and the Novus Ordo people.
Right.
Because like, I could do a whole podcast weekly myself on that. He has people from all over Christianity on his podcast. He's like, he's about to blow up too. I don't know if you guys knew this. He's just signed a deal with Daily Wire.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. So Matt's going to get a lot bigger now.
Megaphone.
Yeah. And I was listening to him years ago when he was just a tiny little podcast still too, but I disagree with him on some things, but it's just, yeah. So you did understand my question very well, and you answered it very well. Thank you. That was like what I was, that's what I was hoping was the case. And then my view was too narrow and I hadn't read enough yet. So thank you.
Stephen, I'd say it's kind of like, you know, the theory of when you're about to go into hypothermia, the the reason your extremities are the first to go is because all of the life-giving blood has gone to the core, right? And apologetics, I mean, there's so many analogies we could offer, but one of the kind of strategies or strengths of apologetics is that we're going to protect the things that are non-negotiable. Well, that's a much broader circle than we're just going to protect, you know, the Presbyterians or whatever. Because it's what is core to the faith that we're interested in. Because you always can debate any number of theological or interpretive issues, but apologetics typically is concerned with those things that are the sine qua non, or the, without this, we don't have Christianity.
Yes.
Yeah, that was what I was going to add to this discussion, is that the modern apologetic space doesn't split hairs over second and third tier doctrines. Instead, sticks to the keep the main thing the main thing. I mean, that's what apologetics is about.
Yeah. Because, you know, after all, we're wanting people to consider the truth of the Christian faith, not the truth of a soteriological position or understanding of, you know, free will or something along those lines. Those are important and all those things, but they're not the crux, if you will, the cross of the faith. So that's exactly right.
This is more of a thought experiment than anything else, but Chris and I did an episode a few weeks ago about the overwhelming statistical evidence that there's a huge Christianity boom in the United States of America right now, if not worldwide. But we were dealing mostly with the U.S. Yeah. And it's a correction to the overwhelming secular bent of the government, public education, all of that, obviously, and the hostility in entertainment towards Christian. You know, every time you see a Bible or a person of faith, you know, they're going to be the bad guy in that episode. So we were talking about that. And while this is going on, This is the weird thing. I just like trying to form this properly. It would be great if those who, like, you've explained everything. Yes, you're an academic, but everything I've asked so far, you've explained, you've made accessible. Okay. You've explained it very well. And not all academics can do that. Some academics are just academic all the time.
That's true.
But I think there's an opportunity now for apologists, apologetics, right now, to really latch on to the people who are coming back to their faith, people who are discovering their faith. And how do you go about that? Does the apologetics community, are you working on a bigger social media presence, being more accessible to the masses like that? How is that going? Or is it still mostly an academic pursuit?
No. Oh, well, Stephen, one, that's a high compliment and praise from you. It warms my heart because, frankly, I have to work very hard at that, and I am not naturally gifted at that. So that you would say that makes me very grateful to the Lord, because I think I tend to run the risk of shooting, you know, in the wrong direction. You know, maybe I'm too philosophical. So thank you. That's very kind, and it's
I'd well deserve. I take that
compliment, man. Thank you so much. When it comes to the popular sort of level and exposure of Christian apologetics, it is we find ourselves, I think, at a spot where programs have been developed at institutions like Luther Rice, like Liberty, like Houston Baptist University, like Biola, that are very rigorous in terms of their apologetic work. And we are now seeing a multitude of graduates come out of these institutions that are basically boots on the ground within the church and within the culture, in the campus movement, if you will, where laity, okay, for the sake of argument, are now being exposed to this wave. And to Chris's point, YouTube podcasts has a huge role to play in that. It is filtering down and saturating the popular level. And frankly, that is where the major impact is going to happen. It's when friends talk with one another over coffee. Or when we go into Thanksgiving and Christmas, parents and children and brothers and sisters and cousins and uncles and nephews, they're having conversations about the veracity of the Christian worldview, or at the very least, a conversation about the big ideas. And that is happening right now. And I would love to say that it's just happening organically. I think it is a part of a strategic plan that started within the academy, that filters into the church, that equips the people, and now it's going to find its way out into the culture. And it just so happens that when you think of Generation Alpha and Generation Z, they are primed to ask the questions, why? You know, what is the, let me pivot a little bit here, because I think this is going to be important for us in the next 10 to 15 years. So much emphasis has been placed on Christianity being true. We should be prepared to answer the challenges against it being good and beautiful. Okay, fine. You've overwhelmed me with the evidence of its truthfulness. Now, can you answer the question regarding its goodness? Is it in fact good for humanity that Christianity is true? And if it is good for humanity, what makes it beautiful? Like, why would I be attracted to this thing? I think that's the horizon of Christian apologetics as we stand right now. But it is filtering its way down to the popular level, and folks are learning the reasons for why we have hope in our life, and his name's Jesus.
And I think it's important that that's happening for this boom in Christianity to take hold and not just be a blip.
Yes.
Or not a fad. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. And I tell you, some of it's just going to be amount of time, I think. I mean, you guys can, I'd like to know what you think, frankly, but if as Christians, we have to take the long view and observe, you know, we're told that the way is narrow and there are few who find it. Now that presupposes, you know, some sort of denominator in that fraction. And we don't know what that denominator is. Of all of human history, of all the people, there are going to be few that find the way. But that sort of natural or gut-level skepticism about we have to be discerning here when we see this swell of emotive and intellectual movement. This is where doctrine comes back in. Is that what is it that you're actually believing here about Jesus, who he is and what he did, so as to rightly call yourself a Christian? So we'll have to watch, and we will have to part. We will have to serve these people who are now very interested in the Christian faith and coming to terms with the claims of Christianity. And they're saying, this sounds persuasive to me. We're going to have to serve these folks and minister to them and be discerning. You know, not all people who say, Lord, Lord, are actually followers of Jesus Christ.
I think a lot about the parable of the sowers.
Yes.
Sower. And that there's a lot of seed being sown right now. It's going to depend on what soil that seed falls in.
Amen.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. There's a lot of good or bad social media. I'm about to write a whole thing about how like social media is a reflection, not a cause. But in this era, people get caught up in just like these experiential things right now, and it's easy to get like a movement or like a group thing going where nobody is being as discerning. Yet I say that as one of those knee jerk social medias, but the people I've personally known who have come back to the faith or are coming to the faith right now are putting some thought into it.
Yeah.
It's right, not right. Just like, oh, I went to this one thing and it was cool.
Right. Yep.
I found a couple of people I like hanging around and they go to church. It's like there are people, there's a journey that I'm seeing from people now that I really haven't seen in the past. Every once in a while, it was just, you know, oh, I'm converting because I'm marrying someone of that faith. I'm going to do that kind of
thing.
Right,
right, right.
So I've seen like an actual thoughtful journey from most of the people I know who have, like, we have a colleague, Ashley. She converted to Catholicism a few years ago. She absolutely buried me in questions for 6 months.
Yep.
She was like, she was relentless. And her questions were deeper than any questions I'd ever gotten. And I had to really start.
Wow.
I really had to start upping my game with her. But it was like, it was such a profoundly thoughtful journey from the get-go. It wasn't just like, I want to try this. So I see a lot of that with people. All the churches are, you mentioned Charlie Kirk earlier. A lot of people started going back to church after he was assassinated. I know quite a few who did, and they're still going. And it's just been so. I feel good, you know, with what you were saying. I understand what you were saying about that, about the discernment and everything. But I see a lot of it, and it's anecdotal, of course. I'm not out there talking to everybody, but I do see a lot of that.
That's right. Yep. I think we have to be open to that, and that is a wonderful thing, because what we're looking to do here is introduce them to the man in the book, and we want them to know Jesus and let him speak for himself by reading him. You know, the man has the words of life. He is the Word incarnate. And so that's who we want to put these folks in front of, you know.
You know, we have to have you back on. We're going to wrap this up here soon, largely because I told you what I've got going on personally right now. I got to get back. Yeah. My best friend's in the hospital right now, everyone. And it's been good. There's been a lot of prayer. People are praying for you. It's wonderful. It's thank you. That's what I love about this community that we have here that Chris is now the boss of. It's the PJ Media family. We're not shy about asking for prayers from our friends colleagues here.
That's right.
Yeah,
we have that kind of workplace environment.
Even some of the people on our team who are not believers.
I was offered prayers. They said, okay, praying for Fred, from two of them who were somewhat agnostic. But yes, that's the way. So that was cool.
Yeah.
But what I want to know is how do people get in touch with you if you want to be gotten in touch with Evan? We are going to obviously we will, when Chris does the post, I assume you're going to put the links to the books that Evan recommended.
Oh, absolutely.
So is there any way do you have a website, anything we should know about you to wrap here?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. You can always find me at lutherrice.edu. That's where I serve as the executive vice president and provost. Of course, I'm on all the socials, so you can find me. And I think all of my social handles are Evan Posey. So I got in early on the ground floor, you know, where
it's a good feeling, isn't it?
some funky, weird name. So you look for me there and you'll find me. But in terms of apologetic stuff, you can always find me at lutherrice.edu.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Evan. I was really excited when Chris said you wanted to be on. I'm sorry we got to keep it short today, but it's a tight schedule for me this week.
We'll have to have you on again.
Yeah, we can have you. Yeah, we would love to have you on again if you would like to join us.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you for the invitation.
And thanks, Evan. We appreciate it.
And we always like to thank everyone for listening, of course. And I will be recording an episode of Unwoke tomorrow with Kevin, so that you can take the hard lurch from the Faith podcast to the Comedians podcast.
Oh, boy.
Impossible.
I'm all over the place. Thank you very much, Evan Posey, once again. Thank you, Chris, for introducing me to Evan.
Absolutely.
Even though it was via Zoom, but it's kind of how we all meet each other now.
That's right. Yeah.
And we will talk to everyone next week. Thank you very much for listening, everyone.
See y'all.